know.
I'm an addict named Judy.
Hey, Judy.
So I got asked to introduce Cassie, and so I didn't have a lot of things planned, which I feel like I suck when I introduce people. But I was thinking, I've had the privilege to see a lot of people come into the rooms and watch them grow. And one thing I can tell you about Cassie is that I have watched her come in these rooms, and she was 19. Lord, yeah, something 17. What is she? Was, yeah, a hot ass mess. still is most days, but she's a whole lot better than she was. But, you know, the one thing I can tell you about her is that she's kept coming back. And, you know, I'm grateful for people that have, and I don't say this lightly, like I know relapse can be a part of somebody's story, but when I get to hear other people's stories about their relapses, and especially when I've watched them come in the room and do the thing and then still go back out and use, it gives me great hope that if I ever choose to go back out and experiment again, that I would have the courage that they've had to come back into the rooms. And what I know about Cassie is that she's had the courage to come back in. And I'm so grateful, and it's such a privilege to know her. So I'm not going to take that much time away from her. Come on and do your thing, girl.
All right. Yeah. 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 Aliens.
Oh, we. I'm a short addict, too. I'm Cassie, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Cassie.
Well, I had a bunch of good shit to say, and it just went out the wazoo, so I'm just going to wing it. You know, sometimes that's what you got to do. My legs are shaking like yours was, Valerie, and not in a good way. So, once again, I'm Cassie, and I'm an addict. So, you know, I got asked to do this workshop. It's been a good couple of months ago, and I've panicked since I got asked to do it, and I don't know why, because I've done it before. But still, it's just nerve-wracking, but it's also a privilege to be able to stand up here, because by the grace of God, me and everybody sitting in here, the disease didn't win today, you know. So I come into the rooms, like Judy was saying, at about 17, 18 years old, you know, and I'm so grateful that I did come when I was so young, because even though I went back out and relapsed as many times as I did, there was a seed planted or I wouldn't be here today. The beautiful things that this program has to offer are right in front of you. You just have to grab it. I've learned also, too, that you can't just work the steps. You have to live by them, not just work them.
That's right.
You know, you can't say that you have a sponsor if you're not utilizing your sponsor. I have, you know, a home group, and I have a community of people that I utilize. My sponsor has a sponsor that has a sponsor. They're all from different states. I'm like, I got hoes in all area codes, you know what I'm saying? Oh, they would kill me if they heard. Well, my sponsor's here today, but anyways. Man, so going back to, you know, when I first come into the rooms, I can say this. I come into Narcotics Anonymous. I don't mean this proper when I say this, but I come into Narcotics Anonymous, a scared little girl who didn't want to get clean but wanted the pain to go away. You know, y'all ever done that? You didn't want to get clean. You didn't want to stop getting high, but you wanted the pain to go away. The withdrawals, the physical, mental, all the things. But eventually, all of those desperations that took me to get where I am now become even more of a desperation each time. You know, each relapse, believe them when they say that they get worse. It seemed like every time I picked up a new drug of choice, I picked up, you know, a new abusive partner, I picked up things that kept causing me to stay in the chaos, because that's where I was comfortable. I got so comfortable and complacent in those things because I was not even comfortable in my own skin. So, of course, I want to rely on a man and a drug to fix it, you know? So, when I come in the first time, I went to my first treatment, you know, at a young age, and it was Whitfield. I like to call it the Looney Tune place, the fifth floor in Pearl, Mississippi. I got the fuzzy socks to prove it. I got a bunch of them. So I went there, and I was, you know, in a psychosis, and I didn't even know it until I got there, if that makes sense, you know. I went to jail first. My parents were doing the best thing they knew for their daughter because I was on the verge of death at that time. And what's crazy is this is just the beginning of my story. I just thought that it was bad. I hadn't got to the worst of the worst yet. So I went, you know, to jail. I went to jail, and I had seen on TV that, like, when you go to rehab that you get a boyfriend. You should live with somebody, you know, because that always works, you know. So I went and put on a red dress and heels. I had two black eyes from the boyfriend I had at the time. And I put on a bunch of makeup to try to cover that up. I put on these big old stilettos because I didn't know when I got there that I was going to jail. I thought that I was going to rehab and I was going to find a husband. I had done convinced myself that he was going to, you know, buy me a car. I don't know. And again, I was in a psychosis, so I didn't know what was going on. So I get to the courthouse to, you know, sign these papers. I'm so excited. I'm just thinking, like, I'm going to get a break and I'm going to fall in love, you know. It's going to be white key tag at first sight. And so I get to the courthouse, right? And my mom and dad, my mom, bless her heart, she deserves a seat beside God. She's, her and my dad, they're so, you know, amazing. They've stuck by me through all this. But anyways, they couldn't handle it. They were done with me. They didn't meet me at the courthouse. My aunt had to do it. So I get there, and, like, I'm in the courtroom, and I look up, and there's a sheriff. He used to, like, get me off the school bus as a kid. You know, my parents are very well known in the community and all the things. So I'm sitting there talking to the sheriff, and he's like, if you don't do something, you're going to die. My daughter's been through this. She's got clean time. And for the first time in my life, I got a little bit of hope when he said that about his daughter, because I went to school with her. She was older than me, but I went to school with her, and I'm like, the most put-together person, the homecoming queen, the star athlete, was a drug addict. And it was like I was hearing my story inside of her. Because just because I come from a good family and they have all these things does not exempt me from the disease of addiction at all. Point blank, period. I used to use that as an ego. That was in the back of my mind. Like, I'm not worried about getting in trouble. I'm not worried about doing this because I know my mom and dad are going to take care of it. But you enable the addict, you will bury the addict. So, anyway, so when we got to, you know, the courthouse, my aunt was talking to me. I signed these papers, but I didn't know as I signed a writ on myself. I didn't read, you know, when they tell you, like, you got to read papers before you sign them, listen to them. Anytime. Even clean, listen to them at a lawyer's office, anything. So I signed them, and I'm like, okay, here's my one-way ticket to get a boyfriend. I thought I was going on a plane. Once again, you know, I'm not in this state of mind. So I look back and my aunt's walking behind me and I see her crying. And I'm like, why is she crying? You know, not thinking that I just made their lives a living hell and they've been watching me slowly kill myself, you know. So he's like, you need to come to the back with me. You know, we're going to get your fingerprints. He knew that he had to distract me, you know, to get her out the door. And I'm like yelling for her. And about that time, she is going out the door, and I feel something cold on my back. He said, I need you to stand against the wall, and he's putting handcuffs on me. Y'all, me and them stiletto heels started running up the wall, and I was screaming like, you can't take me to jail. I didn't do anything. And he was like, I'm doing this for your own good. Your family loves you. Come to find out, I had no choice because I just signed commitment papers on myself, you know? So I get to the back, and they finally let me out of the handcuffs, and they're like, take the dress off. And I'm like, no, I'm wearing this to rehab. I have to look nice getting there, you know? I get back there, and, you know, they put me in this, you know, in the orange jumpsuit. We all know what that is. You know, they put me in my thing, and they hand me a bologna sandwich. Y'all, I was terrified. I go in there and I go straight to the back and I find the biggest bitch I can send. I'm like, here, you know, and I hand her the bologna sandwich because I was scared. So I hand it to her And it was cold. God, I'll never forget it. It was cold. It was nasty. Oh, God. It looked like it could get up and walk. The sandwich did. So I handed it to her. I'm terrified, traumatized, you know, in denial. I didn't have a problem. So I go and I sleep it off. And I think I was in there for about 2 weeks. And I really didn't talk to nobody. They made me get up one time off my rack and clean the shower. I never understood why, but it was because I had, you know, I was so out of it. I was going to the shower thinking it was the toilet and throwing up from, you know, detoxing and stuff. So I done that. They ended up releasing me. When they got a bed open, I went to the state hospital. That was my first treatment center. I stayed for 30 days, and in case y'all were wondering, I did not get a boyfriend. It was not co-ed. I get there, and there's a therapist, and I thank God every day for that therapist, because even though I went back out after this first treatment center, she planted a seed in me. She told me some things about myself that I needed to know. She told me, she said, if you don't do something different, you're going to die. And I thought that I was exempt because of the drug of choice I was doing. None of us are exempt when it comes to using. There is no, once I put any ounce of dope in my body, there is no cutoff for me. There never has been. The day one of getting high, I blink and it's two, 3, 4 years later and I'm in a pile of shit. Like, what happened, you know? And it always starts with that first one. So I get out of that treatment center and they're like, they let my family come see me. I think I'd done like 45 days. I was only supposed to do like 40, but, I was there Thanksgiving and Christmas and, you know, that adds on days cause those days don't count. So I, was there for a while. I thought it was a while. I thought it was just horrible. You know, they wouldn't let you shave or nothing in there. There's actually an addict in this room somewhere that was in there with me. Well, she's not, I thought she was, but she was actually in that treatment center with me, so she knows how it was. So I get out, or I'm about to get out, and my mom and them like, you're not coming home, you're going to sober living. I didn't know what sober living was. This is my first treatment center, you know. And I'm con, manipulated, threw a fit. Told her I would leave, which you couldn't leave this place because you're automatically court ordered once you get there. Telling her that I'm not staying, and of course my mom's like, okay, we understand, she's our baby, we're gonna come get her, you know, just the sweet mama that I have, bless her heart. Also, my mom has been in Mississippi, it's called DHS, Department of Human Services. She's been the headquarters of all the regions and all that stuff. So and my dad, he's retired military, and you know, he was a deacon at the church, and he preached a little bit. These preachers' daughters, man, what are we gonna do with them? So I was the type, while he's in there doing a sermon, I'm out here in the parking lot at church smoking a doobie, hoping that somebody don't walk outside. You know, that's just how I was. So anyways, I get out and I get home. And I go to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in my hometown. I start listening to other people, but I still didn't surrender because in my head I was hearing everything they were saying. But my excuse, like I didn't say it out loud, but my excuse in my head was, I'm not as bad as them, you know? I'm not on paper. I haven't had any children. You know, they're sick, and I'm just here to figure out how I can use successfully and be the party girl that I have been, that everybody loves and everybody wants to be around, you know. So that lasted for a while, even though I stayed in the rooms and I listened. I'm grateful that I stayed and listened, even going back out, because those same people was one of them that, oh, gosh, I'm going to get emotional. One of them same people is this lady that introduced me, and when I tell y'all, she is the only person that gave a fuck to keep it so real with me and look me in my face and say, look, I love you, and if you don't stop, I'm going to be, you know, at your funeral along with everybody else, and nobody there that you use with is not going to be there. We will be, but you've got one foot in the grave, but thank God today I have key tags and not a toe tag. So anyways, I got some connections with some people. to this day, they're still in my life. They've loved me through it all. They've held me accountable, even going back out. And then, you know, I quit coming around. You know, I met a boy. At the time, I said a man. I met a boy. And he was my higher power. He had mommy issues and tattoos. So, of course, I loved him, you know. So we went and got a house together. He ended up slinging his baby mama against the wall, and at the time I loved that for some reason. And I was like, okay, I'm going to love him. He doesn't do that to me. So even though he does it to her, he would never do that to me. So I'm like, let's get a house, you know. So that's what we did, and he was like, you don't need those meetings. You just need me. And I was like, hell yeah, you know. So I quit coming around. We started doing, you know, that K2 shit. He was like, it's not meth. This won't show up on a drug test. And I'm like, fuck yes. Yes, I have found the cure. I can use successfully, and it's not my DOC, so it's not a problem. So we done that. That lasted for a while. I ended up going to my landlord's house in a moo-moo, and it was inside out. And I went to pay my rent, and I was like, here, and I handed her, like, it was like $2. And I was like, here, I just wanted to pay this because I know the pandemic was happening. The pandemic hadn't even happened. It was just getting talked about. So come to find out, I'm in another fucking psychosis. Like, I'm telling y'all, every time I put dope in my body, I go left, like, to left field, and I go to Pluto, and I don't go home, you know, or I don't come home. So anyways, tried to do all that. My mom came and got me. She had me committed. You know, I used a little bit more. Went back to my child's father from the first treatment center. He was abusive. Left this guy I was with, or he left me, because he was like, bro, you talk to yourself too much. I'm like, okay. So he couldn't handle it. So he left. Long story short, I went back out because I quit doing what fucking worked. Every time, never failed. I quit doing what was working. I quit calling my sponsor. I quit going to meetings. I made that man my higher power. So I started back using, got back with, you know, baby daddy. This time, the relapse lasted for like 7 or 8 months. Every time I would used to tell him, every time I get around you, I either go to jail or rehab. And he's like, first of all, I go to jail first. And I'm like, well, it don't matter. We're just toxic for each other. So we go, you know, our separate ways. I go to treatment. That was always my, you know, excuse to get away from him. It wasn't to get clean. It was just to get away from him. So I go to my second treatment center, the one that Tiger Woods went to, the Piney Grove or whatever. I'm in there with doctors and lawyers and this and that, and they're like, we done alcohol. And I'm like, well, I done everything. Like, have you got some, you know? And they're like, we do not, our insurance pays for these certain rooms. And I'm like, man, fuck y'all. My daddy has, like, I had his military insurance. And I was like, he has this wonderful insurance. I can be in the room beside, I don't know, another psychosis. Just thinking I'm better, not willing to surrender. And then 6 days of being at that, or I only was there 6 days, 2 days of being in that treatment center, they wake me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they're like, hey, ma'am, you know, we need to get some blood from you. And I'm like thinking the worst, like we do as addicts. I'm like, they're finna tell me that I have HIV or something, you know. So they're like, we gotta do your blood work to confirm the first thing of blood work we done. And I'm like, is there a problem? And they're like, it's just to be safe. So they go and they do this blood work. They come back and I'm just waiting on the bed, like, what even? Plus I'm detoxing, plus I'm in a psychosis and I'm going crazy, like, what is going on? They come back in there and they're like, ma'am, you're 5 to 6 weeks pregnant with a child. And at that moment, and I know this sounds kind of crazy, but at that moment, besides my desperation of getting clean, I felt absolutely powerless because I could not even take care of myself. How am I going to take care of something else? Somebody else. A baby at that, you know? So I called my mom. I begged them to let me call my mom. I talked them into it, doing the manipulating. Well, the first thing was, come get me. You know, I'm cured, I'm pregnant, and I don't need this place, you know? So I call and I tell my mom, and I'm like, please don't tell my dad, I'm begging you. He was actually at the church at a conference, and I'm like, no one already made their lives a living hell. So she told me she wouldn't, but she fucking did. But it's fine, you know? That beautiful little girl is 4 years old today. I ended up losing custody of her, and I still don't have legal custody, but that's okay. I'm in her life. I live with her. She was born to this disease of addiction by the grace of God. She didn't withdraw. Nothing was wrong with her. You know, no long term. We've had her tested and all that. She is the most beautiful, thriving little thuggerilla princess I've ever met in my life. Like, I brag on her, but at the same time, fuck them kids. But you better not fuck with them kids. You know what I'm saying? So, anyways, I swear I'm very spiritual. I just drop the F-bomb sometimes. But, anyways, so my daughter was, you know, born. Long story short, she got taken from me at 8 months old. I got back with her dad. And I just thought, like, and my mom agreed with me and would to this day. In my head, I thought that I would, you know, either die or get severely injured from this disease. But I was more scared of him and the abuse that I, you know, encountered and I kept running back to. It was like I was just addicted to the chaos. Okay. Addicted to the chaos. I was addicted to the fast life. Not the fast selling. That was not me. I thought I was the plug one time when I got my tax money, but I come to find out I was the extension cord. I was not a plug. You can't do all your profit when you buy it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, good Lord. Yeah, that's not for me. That was not my calling in the drug world. So, anyways, I let everybody around me do that. I tried to give them some pointers, and they're like, please shut up. I'm like, okay, I will. I'll just do yours. I'll be fine. So, anyways, you know, I go, after my daughter gets taken, I go to my third treatment center. I go there, and, you know, the lady, Judy, the introduced me, I go, she works there. She's a counselor. Or she did work there. She did. Sorry. She's a fucking therapist now. Excuse me. She ain't in here right now for the hype. But anyways, she was, she went to counselor, peer support. So she meets me at the door, and she's like, what are you going to do different, sis? What are you going to do different? And I'm like, I'm just so tired, she said, and I'm tired too of seeing you like this, you know, just a mess. Broken crayon, still color though. Yeah. So anyways, I go to my third treatment, I get out, and I go to my first sober living. In all, I've been to 4 treatment centers, 5 sober livings. This last treatment center I went to, it was faith-based. Jesus Christ is my higher power, but that place was Jesus jail. Beans and rice and Jesus Christ, okay? You had to live, breathe, and eat by it. I ended up doing five almost 6 months there. I got out of there, and I went to Florence where, you know, I met some of the most amazing fucking people I've met in my whole entire life. My sponsor, is from Florence Survival Group. People talk about, you know, you gotta love yourself when you first come in the rooms. I didn't. I loved her first. She taught me how to be a friend. She taught me that it's okay to not be okay. She taught me that it's okay to call, and sometimes it's a two-way street. You know, well, most of the time it's a two-way street. When I called her to ask her to be my, I tell the story all the time, to be my sponsor, she worked at a chicken plant, right? And she was like, hey, you know, I'm Cindy, and we're talking about our day. And I tell her I've been there, and at the time I'm going, you know, through a death of my grandma. It was about to happen. Anyways, long story short, she goes on and on about how fucked up her day was. She's like, fuck this place. And I don't even know her. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck this place. I'm so sick of them. It stinks in here. It's hot. You know, and she's da-da-da-da-da. But she doesn't know that that one phone call changed my whole entire life, because she cared enough to tell little old junkie nobody me about her day. You know, it made me feel important that she cared enough to hold a conversation with me, and she didn't say nothing bad about me or tell me how bad I was or worthless I was. And I was already feeling that in here. She just cared to tell me how bad her day was and then gave me some encouragement. And then I was like, okay, well, after she tells me all this spiel of how things are fucked up, I'm like, well, you want to be my sponsor? She said, well, she said, they all fucking say that. They don't ever call me again. But, I mean, if you want to, you can. I'm like, hell yeah. And I've called that bitch every day since. And at the end of this month, it'll be 3 years that I've called her every day. So, once again, she has taught me so much about myself that I didn't even know. I've actually worked steps this time, slowly but surely. But I'm almost done with them, by the grace of God. I'm a sponsor today. I get to pour into women, and they pour just as much into me. And I couldn't even help myself. So somebody needed me today. It makes you feel like this is all worth it, even when you're going through it. The newcomers, y'all give me hope. Y'all give me the taste of desperation that I once had that keeps it alive, you know. So I hate today that two people that are very, very dear to me and will always be dear to me are not sitting in this crowd. I've went through a lot of death in recovery. I've went through none while I was using, and I know that God done that for a reason, because I wouldn't have been able to handle it, but I have leaned on my people. So when they tell you lean on your people, believe them. Because somebody that I looked up to that was like a mentor to me that I thought was okay was not fucking okay. The disease of addiction took her life not even a month ago. But there's so many things that I still hear her say, and I will hang on to that instead of the bad shit. The things that she shared, the thing that she pours into me, I can still hear her voice. I can still hear Jim Glock's voice in my head. A dick cannot keep you clean. I can hear it over and over and over again. That's all that replays in my head, you know. He taught me that I don't only have a drug problem, I have a fucking me problem that causes me to have a drug problem. All this relapse that I'm talking about, I always treated it like a drug problem. But today, I know that if I'm going through some stuff, even though this phone can be 1,000 pounds, I have to pick it up. I have to. If I don't, it's going to stay right here, and I'm going to sit in it, and it's going to keep me sick. I aired out my whole dirty laundry in 1 hour of knowing Cindy, my sponsor. And I love that for me, because she was like, okay. Today, I get to be of service. I get to be a mother to my daughter. I get to be here today with y'all by the grace of God, because we hadn't had power or water for 2 weeks, but I've made it work. I've cooked hot dogs and fire. I was built for this shit. My mom was not. She was like, what are we going to do? And I was like, listen, we're going to be fine. And I shared this the other night at a meeting, too. Obviously, I've been a little bit out there with the thug life. My mama has not. My kid locked the door at the house, and all the lights and water are off, and she's like, I gotta get in there, I gotta get this, and da-da-da. She was like, I can't open the door, and she's yelling at my kid. I said, give me 1 second. So I turned my little flashlight on, and I went and broke a hanger, you know what I'm saying, and just, you know, broke into it. And she was like, how do you know how to do that? And I was like, mama, look, we're already all ill, don't even ask no questions, you know what I'm saying. Once again, I was like, I am built for this shit, we're good, I'm gonna take care of you, it's fine. So we cook hot dogs in the fire. You know, even though she's panicking, I was panicking on the inside, but it's like a game of spades. You can't let them see your left hand, because then all hell breaks loose. So, but I get to be there with my family today. I get to be here with my family today, too. We're not blood related, but I know there's not, especially on this front row and second row, that there's nobody in here that I can't call when I'm going through it. If I'm grieving, if I'm sad, if I'm happy. You know, I get to share all of that. I get to, I work at a treatment center. I've been there for 1 year and 3 months. Fuck them kids too, but love them kids, you know. I get to scream with them, because sometimes that's all somebody wants to do is just scream and cry, and that's fine. I'm here. I've been there, you know. So I got Employee of the Month, like my first 2 months of working there. Felt important. And I'm grateful today that I get to do the next right thing, and the blessings of recovery, the overflow of inner peace and inner happiness that I finally surrendered, because that was my problem. I couldn't surrender. Just work step one. That's all you got to do. And work them in order, 1 through 12, not 13. I'm guilty of that. That's why I relapse every time. But, you know, I actually waited 1 year this time. Thank God. I needed to wait 10 probably. But anyways, I love this program. If you're here today, you're a miracle. You matter. And I'm grateful that this disease didn't take your life today, and you're sitting here, and you get to be a walking miracle. And that's really all I got.
All right, I'm John Boy, and I'm an addict.
Hey, John Boy.
Man, that was good stuff right there. Narcotics Anonymous has changed people's lives. It is changing people's lives, and it will continue to change people's lives. When I was in treatment, this next guy's story was the first story I'd heard, and as soon as he told his story, I heard my story. And every time he talks, he teaches me something about myself, and I learn something new every time. I have asked Trey to come up here and speak.
How y'all doing today?
Hey, Trey.
I'm an addict named Trey.
Hey, Trey.
So the reason I'm standing here today is because of my higher power, I choose to call Jesus Christ. And if y'all don't mind, I'm going to take just a second, and I'm going to kind of get connected with him because I want him to talk instead of me. All right, so this is about relapse and recovery. I want to talk about recovery for a second, man. Give yourself a hand for not being high today, if that's the case. One day, 1 hour clean for people like me is a miracle, and I'm just blessed to be able to stand. I'm so grateful that I got the opportunity to come up here and spend this time with y'all today. The person that was supposed to be standing where I'm at today, well, the person that was scheduled to be standing where I'm at today, Jim Glock. He made it, y'all. We lost him, but he finished up clean. And, you know, I want to talk about that just for a second. Jim knew about recovery, but he knew about relapse. But he came back. And because he came back, he was here when I came back. Because my sponsor came back and worked the 12 steps, I was able to come back and work the first step. Because I worked the 12 steps, my sponsees are able to work the first step. And right now, if you're sitting in this room, there is somebody that has not even been born yet that needs your ass to be here when they get here.
Yes.
I got this white key tag in my pocket. I meant to bring my last one from home, but I forget shit because I'm old and I've been hitting the head a lot and I've done a lot of drugs. So this belongs to Tony H. He just spoke right before this and he did a great job, by the way. If y'all hadn't had a chance to meet him. He's a special guy. But this, I don't want to look at this as like a white key tag like we look at in the meetings. I want to look at this as an opportunity for connection.
Yeah.
All right? And that's what this program's about. When I came in, the first time I read the introduction to the basic text was in the penitentiary when I was 19 years old, and I didn't read the whole paragraph. What I did is I read the first part of it, and it said, "There have been many books written about the nature of addiction," and I put it down and didn't pick it back up for another 28 years. Now, I came in and out of the rooms. I spent, in 1986, I did my first mind-altering drug, and I remember thinking, how can something that makes me feel this good be bad? Man, I thought I'd found a key to life. I thought I'd found a key to happiness. I can't blame it on a bad childhood. I had great parents. I had a great childhood. But looking back, man, I knew I was an addict at 4 years old because I couldn't eat just two cookies. I had to eat the whole sleeve of cookies. You know, I couldn't just drink a little bit of milk. I had to drink all the milk. I didn't just want my presence. I wanted your presence too. You know, I just didn't want my attention. I wanted the attention that my parents were giving other people too. I wanted everything. Nothing was ever enough for me. And when I found drugs, man, I could be this social butterfly. But deep down, I was a scared little boy, and deep down, I still am in a lot of ways. But I want to talk about this relapse thing for a second. I'm going to lay this key tag right here. Y'all don't let me forget about it because it's important. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Sir, you're number 11 in the blue shirt. What's your name, sir?
Chris.
Chris, it's nice to meet you, Chris. I'm Trey. I'm an addict, man. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
I want everybody that I just pointed to in the first two rows and Chris, in the first three rows and Chris, to stand up for me for a second, please. I want to make this visual. In the next hour, 11 people will be dead from overdoses. I'm showing y'all what 11 people look like. In the next hour, 11 people will lose their battle with this disease. Now, that's not counting the people that might get in a wreck while they're driving drunk. That's not counting the people that might get shanked in the neck in a penitentiary for reaching over somebody's tray after a salt shaker. That's not counting the young man who might get shot down over $30 worth of crack in an alley somewhere. This is just overdoses. So the number of people that this disease is going to take in the next hour is unknowable. But now I want everybody to stand up. Because we're here doing something different, this is a number of people that it's not going to take in the next hour. Y'all can sit down now. Thank y'all for the visual. I appreciate it. So, like I said, I read that first half of the paragraph in the basic text in the penitentiary at an age 9 meeting a long time ago, and I didn't read it again. I went in and out of meetings, but what I was doing was I was trying to look like I was trying to do something different. But what I was finding every time I went into one of those meetings was, I'm different than you. I'm better than you. I'm worse than you. I got more to say than you do. I didn't listen to understand. I listened to respond. The minute you start saying something, I got something to say. Let me tell you about my cross to bear. Let me tell you about what's happened to me. Let me tell you how bad I am. You don't want to mess with me, man. But that scared little boy was the one that was talking. Y'all ever seen Beetlejuice? The first one now. All right, I'm telling them my age now. You know, he picks him up out of a little aquarium thing and all his knives come out of it. See, that was me with my character defects. Anybody try to get close to me, I'm going to hurt you because I know you're going to hurt me and I'm just going to cut it. I'm going to do it on my terms. And that's the way I looked at life. That's the way I looked at the world, man. You know, chalk it up to the game, homie. Now, I use those character defects as defense mechanisms. I did that in the rooms, too. And what I did is I walked in and looked for every little contradiction within the traditions or the steps that I saw somebody using. You know, I would take the traditions and beat somebody over the head. One time I was going through a divorce, and I was in a home group, which was her home group, too, which we were both pretending anyway. And she wasn't there that night, and I started telling on myself for some of the stuff I did, and I'm going through this divorce. Ended up costing me about $30,000 in court. And then I used that. The 12th tradition, y'all, you know, I'm beating people over the head. I challenge everybody to a fight, to hell with the NA, to hell with y'all, this shit don't work. You know, and there I was again. Of course, I wasn't really clean. I was pretending to be clean. I thought I was doing better because I'd cut back. But, you know, the other fellowship, they have something they call a slip. Now, I'm not talking, without the other fellowship, I wouldn't be standing here. Just don't get it twisted now. This ain't a knock on them, but they got something they call a slip. Unfortunately, because of that little visual I showed y'all a minute ago, a slip can take your life. We're not dealing with the same thing we were dealing with when I first started using in 1986. But they've come out with this thing called Narcan that's kept that number down some, believe it or not. But see, the disease of addiction is in somebody else's brain right now, and they're going to come up with something that's not going to work with either. And then something else will happen, and then something else will happen, and then something else will happen. We don't have the room for error that we used to have. So this key tag right here, I want to make a new connection tonight, this morning. I want to make a new connection. If nobody comes up, that's fine. I'm going to leave it sitting on the stage. But if you want to see a group of people stand up and get behind you because we're proud of you for coming back, somebody that's got less than 30 days clean, I want you to come up here and take this key tag from me. All right. Who you are and where you're from, man.
Chris, I'm an addict.
Hey, Chris.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, welcome, Chris.
And this is the first day.
Oh, my God. So look, before I leave, before we leave this room today, what I want to do, Chris, is I want you to help me stay clean. You think you can do that?
I can try.
The way I want you to do that is before we leave this room today, I want to get your number, and I want you to get my number. And I want us to make a connection together, man.
All right.
All right?
Let me do that.
And a year from now.
Hey, over you.
A year from now, I want you to come back in here and tell everybody how you did it.
All right.
All right, my man.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here, brother. I'm glad you're here. See, that's what I'm talking about. I came back in the rooms. What I did is I came in the rooms and I looked for reasons to leave the rooms again. I came in the rooms and I looked for what was wrong with you and what was wrong with the program. I came in the rooms because people told me I had to come in the rooms. You know, I walked in the penitentiary the same way every time. There's two things in the penitentiary, and all I can do is give you what I got, man. You know, I know I'm not up here trying to tell somebody else a story. I'm going to give you what I got. There's two things in the penitentiary. One of them is an inmate, and the other one is a convict. And those are two completely different things. So I had to walk into the penitentiary, and I had to leave my humanity, what made me tray at the door, because that made me a victim. That made me a target. Anything that showed weakness or humanity made me a target. So how do you think I walked into a treatment center? How do you think I walked into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting? How do you think I walked into a mental health institution? I walked in there the same way because I had to survive. But my views were skewed. My views were skewed. Did I leave my phone over there? Will you hand it to me, ma'am? Because I can't remember shit. Like I said, I've been hitting the head a lot. I had kind of a smart mouth when I was in active addiction, and people, you know, they reminded me of that quite violently a lot of times. But what I want to do is, because my perception was skewed, I want to read something to you out of the basic text in chapter 7, okay? Recovery Relapse, Basic Text, page 81. We must relearn many things that we have forgotten and develop new approach to life if we are to survive. This is what Narcotics Anonymous is all about. In the first step, I was looking for where freedom was. And I couldn't find freedom because I hadn't truly surrendered, right? But if I start thinking about where does it first mention freedom in a step works? And then I started looking at it, and I'm trying to overthink because I'm an addict. Now the obsession right there. In the first two words of the first step, it's about freedom. Y'all know what they are? We admitted. We got honest. Once I tell the truth, I'm free. Because you can't hold nothing over me. I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not. The truth is the truth. Here it is. Now I can start to get better. And you know, I told you in that second step, it talks about we came to believe that the power granted ourselves could restore sanity. I wasn't listening to understand, man. I was listening to respond. How could I get any hope from you if I'm not listening to what you got to say, if I'm not listening to your story? I got it twisted, though, in my other half-hearted attempts to work the steps. And I thought that being restored to sanity was always going to be this wonderful thing. But I learned a lesson. Mike Tyson's right uppercut is a power greater than me that will restore my ass to sanity in a second. And sometimes my God has used things that hurt to restore me to sanity. And I've learned in this program, I don't have to run back out when something hurts anymore. I don't have to hide from things that hurt. Man, I never learned how to deal with stuff. If Mason was in here, I'd make him shake his head and roll his eyes, but it's the truth. I had 11 years clean, and I turned 12 years old, and I stayed fucked up for 35 straight years. I didn't gain coping skills. I had one coping skill, and that's to put one more in. You know, I want to talk about Jim again for just one second. It hurts to lose people. I've lost a lot of people in active addiction, and I've lost a lot of people in recovery. I've lost a lot of people in recovery to relapse, but I've lost some that made it. And I want to turn your attention back to something I said just a minute ago. If you're in here, and you're thinking that you don't have that much of an impact on the people that surround you, I want you to understand it's because of you that I'm able to stay clean today. is because of Cassie, and I'm able to see, we know a lot of the same people, we've been through some of the same things, you know, but to see a different perspective than mine with the same set of facts. That's what this program is about. That's what this is talking about right here. An open mind. You cannot graft a new idea onto a closed mind. You know, and to be able to sit and listen to my sister share and some of that stuff was pretty funny, though, I got to tell you. I had to hear her share. You know, we're different sex. We're different age. We're different a lot of things. But I could hear my story and hers. And I'm sure that y'all could, too. You know, this disease is the same in all of us. It's obsessive, compulsive, and self-centered. And for me, it starts right here, and then it goes here next. Something don't feel right here, and I start to think. And every time I think about something, I'm going to change the facts a little bit. The first time I think about it, it might be pretty close to what the truth is. But that don't work for me because I can't justify my behavior with that. So let me change the facts just a little bit and think about it again. And before I know it, I done talked myself into doing what I know I shouldn't do. I've justified my behavior, and I went back out. By the grace of God, I made it back. And I went back out, and by the grace of God, I made it back. And I went back out, and by the grace of God, I made it back. And I went back out, and by the grace of God, I made it back. And I went back out. Y'all hear this trend? I cannot tell you, I cannot stand here honestly and tell you how many times I've relapsed. I have no freaking clue how many times I've relapsed. But I know this much. I hadn't found it necessary to use drugs since September the 9th, 2021. And that's the first time that I felt free in 51 years of being on this earth. That's the first time I felt free. There was something else I was going to say, and it slipped my mind because, you know, I've told y'all already why.
Old age.
If you're wondering if this program is for you, man, I got some good news for you. You don't have to die from this disease. You don't have to be a statistic. Because these people that stood up on this front row, they're not just numbers. That's Cindy. That's Cassie. That's Becca. That's Ricardo. And that's who we're losing. An hour from now, 11 people that are breathing right this second will not be breathing. We don't have to die from this disease. This world that we're in right now is more divided than it's been since I've been alive. And that's been a long time. It's been a long, long time. But in Narcotics Anonymous, we're showing them how to do it. Because we're coming in here, a bunch of junkies with different political views, different skin colors, different genders, different this, different that. But we're in here together and we're showing each other, we're showing the world how to love each other. We're showing the world that it's okay to make a mistake and come back. We're showing the world we don't have to be against each other to disagree. We can disagree without being disagreeable. Ain't that what the text said? I think it says that somewhere in there, but I can't remember exactly where. I'm so grateful, man, that I get to be a part of something bigger than myself. And I'm so grateful that you guys chose to come in here and spend this hour with me. Let's not forget my brother. Everybody who has relapsed, raise your hand. We realized when we made it back. Don't forget what I told you. There's somebody right now that needs your ass to be here when they get here. And I need you to stay here so I can stay here. What an honor to be here. This is going to be a great weekend. I haven't seen this many people on a Thursday since I've been coming to this thing. Wait till tomorrow, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
There's one elevator. I want everybody to check yourself at the door. Don't start pushing. Don't start cussing. It ain't the stairs' fault. It's somebody's fault, but it ain't the stairs' fault. There's one elevator. I will tell you, the stairs go outside and you can come back in. Make sure you got your key if you go down the stairs or you won't be able to get in the door. I love you guys, man. Thank y'all for letting me spend this time with you. And thank y'all for being here. Y'all have an amazing day. Thank you.
I'm John Boy Naminati. Let's give another round of applause for our students.